Well, I'll tell you what, I can feel it too. Welcome to Hagmann. It's Monday, May 5th, 2025. Happy Cinco de Mayo or Cinco de Porte. I'm not sure which. Just asking. A lot of things to talk about with the man, myth, and legend, John Moore. TheLibertyMan.com is with me tonight. I want to thank everyone for your patience. We did not have a meeting of supporters on Sunday. We rescheduled it for next Sunday. And then, wouldn't you know, I found out it's Mother's Day. So let me ask you folks, do me a favor to the supporters listening to this, whether it is live or by rebroadcast, for those who want to join that meeting, and the majority will dictate this. If you want to keep the 7 p.m. meeting, you've already rescheduled for the 18th? Okay. Mass email went to the supporters. Okay. You and I got to talk more often, Eric the Tech. Is this thing on?
Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. All right. So to the moms out there, out of respect for you and for the people who are, well, for the moms out there, thank you. Thank you for being such great moms and grandmas and aunts and sisters, and to the children of the moms out there, make sure you take care of your mom. Give her a hug. And I'll tell you what, you'll never know what it feels like not to be able to do that at a young age. Or at least I hope you'll never feel that. So John's got a lot of stuff to talk about. And of course, those who don't know John, he hosts something called the Liberty Man Radio Show. John Moore, Liberty Man, on Republic Broadcasting Network every weekday. If you want to put that up on the screen, there it is. Oh, you already did. All right. Check it out. Check out the program. I'm going to tell you what, it's necessary show prep. At least for me, it's necessary show prep. And I have to, okay, there we go. Hit some things around there. And you can tune in every weekday morning. The time is there. The link is there. The archives are there. And then he's got a heck of a news page. I would urge everyone to go to, well, bookmark and go to thelibertyman.com. So without any further ado, let's bring John on. John, thanks for joining me, and thanks for your patience as we teed up tonight.
Thank you, Doug. Good to be with you, as always. Well, since we talked a few minutes ago, I found some breaking news.
Okay.
Earlier today, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has stated that, here's a quote, "We will strike Iran."
Beautiful. Marvelous.
Yeah, keep in mind, Iran is a client state of both Russia and China, that instead of their MiG jet fighters being buried in the sand, which Saddam Hussein had because of the lack of spare parts, his jet fighters actually fly.
Yep.
And, you know, this is a serious country with a serious military backed up by two superpowers. And if ever there was a cause for concern about World War III being touched off, this would be it, sir.
All right. So when do we practice the duck and cover drills? Get underneath our desks, you know, get by under the windows and like we did in grade school. Of course, you've got to be of a certain age to remember that. But how ridiculous! Where are they going? I mean, what are they targeting? Are they targeting specifically the nuclear, the so-called nuclear only, the nuclear plants?
Well, it's kind of up in the air. The Houthis shot a missile and hit near the edge of the Ben Gurion airport. Didn't really do much damage, but that's what the justification is. And logic would dictate that they want to go after the warehouses where the missiles are. If they manufacture missiles, go after the manufacturing facility. We simply don't know what the attack is going to be, other than Mr. Netanyahu says it's going to be an attack, which is pretty foolish to telegraph in advance you're going to attack somebody, but that's what he's done.
Interesting. Okay, I just real quick want to address a couple of people in the chat. Rebo Farms, isn't it strange that the government's record storage facility in Butler County, PA, that's been on our radar. I'm telling you that right now. Thank you, Dogwins. I'm having a hard time reading the names. I apologize. As well as to you, John, real quick, and I hate to knock you off stride here, but I don't know if this has anything to do with anything at all. I'm supposed to ask you about Black Star in February of 2026. Is that something that you're well versed on, or you want to leave that for another time?
Yeah, let's. I'm not really ready to address that. I'll do some quick updates on research and see if I can address that with any kind of intelligence.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's good. And I apologize to John and to the folks. My voice is a little bit weak. So if I sound a little bit off, I apologize in advance, and you can adjust your mid-range however you want to make me sound like either Daffy Duck or Morgan Freeman. Okay. All right. So we're facing – what's the timetable on this? With Iran, with Israel, what do you think, based on your observations and your research and the breaking news? I mean, what would be the timetable on this? And can this be stopped? Or can Donald Trump say, hey, wait a second, don't do that?
Well, he can do that, and that would be a wise thing to do, given the way these different countries are connected. And announcing he's going to attack, like I say, is typically a very foolish thing in terms of military tactics to announce your attack beforehand. I would say 24 to 72 hours would be a reasonable time frame. Otherwise, if he doesn't attack in 3 days, people won't take him seriously.
Do you take him seriously, though? I mean,
I do. This is a serious guy. There's no reason not to take him seriously. That'd be foolish to do so.
Wow. Okay.
Well, it's well known that Israel has multiple nuclear warheads. It's unknown how many Iran has. I keep telling people their focus has been on manufacturing warheads, when if you got the oil revenue that Iran does, you can just simply buy the darn things. You don't need to be manufacturing them. And I'm sure that either Pakistan or North Korea or both of them would have nuclear weapons for sale for their Muslim buddies in Iran. So I think it's foolish not to believe that Iran doesn't have one or more nuclear weapons, because they got the money to buy them.
No, look at the AQ Con flea market of nukes back earlier in the early 20th century. It was just incredible. I mean, how things played out. And Jerome Corsi wrote the book Nuclear Iran. I think it was back in the 90s he wrote that. And I remember having breakfast and coffee with Dr. Corsi in D.C. at the National Press Club. And that was one of the things we talked about, was Iran having nukes. And he said, look, they've got nukes. You know, they've had nukes. And this isn't, 5 years ago, maybe.
Right.
6 years ago. So, I'm convinced they had. But you know what? When we talk about Iran, when you look at folks... This is why I love history so much, and I urge everyone to really get into history. Take a look at pictures of Iran, Persia. Let's call it Persia. Take a look at pictures back in the 70s. Look, I know all about the Shah. I get that. I get that the guy wasn't a good guy. But when you look at Iran back in the 70s compared to today, what a difference. And you know, that son of a bitch, Carter, allowing that revolution, or actually fomenting that revolution, to get where we're at today. And he's celebrated by the left?
Right.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
I know. Well, you can't be a leader of a Muslim country and be a nice guy. That's those two thoughts can't occupy the same brain. It's not possible. Right. I mean, seriously, the closest I've seen might be the King of Jordan. It's been said that there's nothing better than a friendly monarchy, nothing worse than an enemy monarchy. But these kings of Jordan have been pretty decent guys with pretty decent attitudes. They're still Muslims, however, and they have to do these crazy Muslim things to do in order to stay in power.
But it's a government. Let's be clear on this. It's the Muslim government in this case, especially in this case, as opposed to the people. The people are suffering because of the oppression by the Iranian government, by the Muslim governments, by the people in power, and by their worldwide caliphate conquest. And you, John Moore, talk about that all the time. So
I do. If you look at photographs of street scenes in Tehran, the capital city of Iran, back in the 60s and 70s, early 70s, the women are walking. It looks like it could be a street scene from New York or San Francisco or St. Louis. The women are wearing normal Western clothes, dresses, high heels, carrying purses. Their heads aren't covered up. I didn't know until recently the Shah made it illegal for women to wear the traditional Muslim dress that women are compelled to wear. But I don't think it took much convincing for women to wear nice dresses and high heels and makeup. I think they were pretty easy to go along that with that voluntarily, don't you, Doug?
I do. And it, you know, to me, that was just the what would you call it? The veneer, the freedoms that allowed that. Some may call it immodest dress, but it was Western dress,
right?
The freedoms, the underlying freedoms that provided that veneer.
You go to capital cities in the Far East, in South America, in Africa. The women pretty much all dressed the same, with slight variations. They wear dresses, high heels, makeup, and you know, their nylons and so forth. And once you get, you know, if you're in the Congo, once you get away from the major cities, you know, people wear their traditional garb. But women worldwide like to dress up and wear a nice dress and nylons and high heels and makeup. That's pretty ubiquitous worldwide, Doug.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right, sir. Well, so we're going to keep our eyes on this. Folks, keep your eyes as well on this. I'm not in favor necessarily. Well, I'm not in favor of this, but I'm not in favor of, you know, loose nukes by Muslim countries being fired around. I don't know. It should have never, ever been allowed to get to this point. Of course, the people making the decisions are not necessarily who we think. So here we are. Okay. Continue, my good man. Continue.
All right. Well, let's do a segue here to Elon Musk and Doge. My wife was telling me a story earlier today that Doge has discovered 100,000 U.S. federal government employees that were drawing unemployment at the same time they're drawing their salaries for doing their jobs. And I was telling my wife, I said, these people need to be fired. And then an attempt made to recover the funds that were distributed to these people illegally. The left is going absolutely bonkers crazy with what Elon Musk is doing. And they're making all kinds of proclamations like Elon Musk is going to go after various welfare benefits, which he's not going to do that in terms of anything that people are getting legally. It's the illegal distribution is what he's going after, and he should be going after. Cutting off the aid to the illegal aliens will be a major way for these people to self-deport. I learned about 2 or 3 months ago that the majority of illegal Haitians coming in aren't coming from Haiti. They're coming from places in South America where they've been living a good life without working, and they came to the U.S. as illegal aliens thinking they could even have it better. These illegal alien things are a lot more complex than people suspect here, Doug. There are a lot more.
When you say that, are you talking about the we know Biden, that Biden regime, not Biden himself, because he, you know, he's a meat puppet, but the people behind Biden who installed him, they constructed, well, they arranged everything that we're seeing in terms of this invasion. What is your assessment today based on everything we've seen after the first 100 days? The first 100 days, Homan and company had a great, in my view anyway, a great investigative period where they looked at who was in this country. So based on that, what was the intent of the people behind the Biden regime for the people who are here now? What was their intent?
There were several goals. One of the main ones, which isn't talked about too much, is implementing the Cloward-Piven strategy. Right. Which is basically to bankrupt the country by emptying out the U.S. Treasury to the private individuals, which of course can't be done under the Constitution through various handouts. So that was one thing. Another thing was to create Democratic voters that would keep them in office in various states and the nation and the U.S. president for decades into the future. That was another goal. I think a third goal, especially among the hardcore communists, was to destroy our society with bring in people who have no intention of becoming English-speaking Americans that go to work every day and have a goal of a three-bedroom ranch-style home in the suburbs. That is not who these people are, never will be. They have no intention of becoming part of mainstream America. They intend to live off the government dole and make babies and commit crimes.
Exactly.
So Tom Homan, and I've never met Tom. I talked to one of his associates a couple of years ago. But Tom Homan's initial goal is to get the worst of the worst out of the country first. And that's a worthwhile goal that you and I would certainly support, to go after the murderers, rapists, armed robbers, all the various thieves and criminals that are in this country illegally, many with previous convictions. And that's a smart thing, is to go after them first. Many of these other people, like I mentioned, the Haitians, they will self-deport. Once the gravy train stops and they know they'll have to go to work or be hungry, they'll just get the hell out of Dodge and go back to Chile. That's where these Haitians were living in Chile, living a good life on the Chilean dole. And they wanted a better life here on with the American handouts. So I think we're going to see many, probably millions of illegal aliens self-deport. Now, once the gravy train stops, the five-star hotel rooms in New York City, all the debit cards they get, the telephones they get, the food stamps they get, free health care, free education. Once it all comes to a halt and the gravy train ends, they're going to get the hell out of Dodge and go back where they came from, I think, Doug.
John, the funding that we're looking at through USAID, through a lot of these other agencies and NGOs, to the NGOs and through the NGOs, but the genesis of funding, has that been definitively cut off, or
it's in the process? These are incredibly complex matters, and best I can tell, it's a process that's in the works right now, or what might be called a work in progress, to cut off all these funds going from USAID to the illegal aliens. And okay. And of course, to the NGOs that are also giving it to the illegal aliens. So it's a process that will take some time. But something that we need to talk about is the amount of time that has been spent so far, just over 100 days. I think we're on maybe 104, 105 days, something of that nature. People are upset that the FBI and the Department of Justice have not filed criminal charges, warrants for people involved with Anthony Fauci and other bad actors. And they don't know the complexity and how long it takes. Every murder case I ever worked took a year from the time our client was charged with with murder until it was resolved. And we're only 3 months into matters that are far more complex than a routine murder trial. Far more complex.
I would say, yeah. Go ahead. I mean, continue with that.
Well, the men and women in the FBI, the men and women in the Department of Justice, they know that any document they're involved with will become part of the public record that will be studied and reviewed for the next century or more. So everything is double-checked and triple-checked to make sure it's accurate, make sure it has the rule of law behind it, that no mistakes are made because of the historical importance of what's going on here. What President Trump is doing with the FBI and the Department of Justice and DOJ is a historical matter of very significant proportions. There's a lot of concern right now, for example, that the client list for Epstein Island has not been released. That's radioactive. That list is radioactive. And before it's released, there's going to be deals cut with various individuals on that list to accomplish certain goals. That's why it hasn't been released yet.
Okay, hold that thought, because let me ask you a question.
That's what I would do.
Pam Blondie. Okay, now look. I pray that I am wrong, and I pray that you are 100% right. Correct. Pam Blondie got on the airwaves and said, "Oh, yeah, it's on my desk." And then she said, I got snookered.
Well,
by SDNY, by the FBI in the SDNY district or New York field office.
Right.
The trucks came. I get that.
Okay. Well, let's approach this from a different matter. Doug, let's say you and I are with the Department of Justice and we got desks right in each other and the Epstein list is on our desk.
By the way, that would be a fun gig. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. So you got the complete list. I got the complete list. We got workstations right next to each other. We got our computers. We got our phones. And you and I go to lunch and I say, "Doug, this list is breathtaking. The men, and assuming it's women, the men on this list have information that cannot be had otherwise. They have influence that would be difficult to get otherwise. They have things and access to things that you and I want access to. So let's work at this list so that we accomplish not only exposing who these men are, but accomplishing uncovering as much corruption and fraud and illegal activity as we can. So let's do this, Doug. Let's bring them in one at a time and interview them and let them know that we got them by the short hairs. And if they don't come clean with all the illegal activity, corruption, bad acts that they're both personally involved with and aware of, that we will go ahead and reveal their names. You may call it a form of blackmail. I look at it as a negotiation.
That's not blackmail. That's good investigative technique. But
well, it is. It is.
But assure us it's being done.
Of course, it's being done. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity to get to the bottom of all the corruption, all the greed, all the criminal activity that would happen once in a lifetime, and it has to be dealt with in that manner. And that's what I would do. That's what I would do.
Okay, then let's go with that in theory. Then explain to me what Pam Blondie did.
She's naive. She came in as saying naive as to the gravity and the historical significance and the weight of the evidence held by these men that traveled to Epstein Island. Having sex with a 14-year-old girl who looks like an 18 is one thing, which was very often the case. That's a criminal matter on the face of it, and of course it is, on one hand. On the other, these men have knowledge and involvement with serious crimes, maybe even treason, We simply don't know what all they were involved with. We simply don't know. And if it was on my desk, I would be more concerned with the national security, high crimes and treason, theft of tens of millions of dollars than I would whether they spent a weekend with a young lady who was pretending to be an adult. That's where my focus would be on the real hardcore evidence of crimes, national security matters, as opposed to what these guys may or may not have done for over a weekend with some girls.
Okay. I'll give you that. However, look, I get the fact because we've both worked very complex cases, homicides, and on both sides of the justice system.
And sometimes together. Two or three times, myself and the cops working together.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've had the cops and detectives in my office. Probably 40, 50 times over the years, talking about homicide cases. And then we go. But anyway, all of that combined, here's... I got two concerns, and then I'm going to drop it on my end. But I have two concerns. Number one, I suspect that in addition to the CIA being a driver of the Epstein operation, I think Mossad and perhaps one or two other intelligence agencies had their mitts in this.
Like MI5.
Yeah, exactly. Especially MI5. So all of that... Are they protecting, for example, people like Barack over in Israel, his former and current future legacy? Are they protecting the power broker? And I'm not dissing on Israel, okay? I'm just asking questions, matter-of-fact questions. But, John, are they protecting their friends while throwing everyone else under the bus, or do you think they're going at this honestly and with integrity?
You're talking about the Department of Justice, what they're doing right now?
Our Department of Justice, okay. Right.
Well, you brought up another level of complexity here, and that's the involvement of the various intelligence agencies, CIA, MI5, Mossad. They were doing what they were doing with Epstein Island, funding it and helping making it happen to reach their goals, which were not necessarily the goals of the American people, consistent with the U.S. Constitution, not necessarily the same at all. So what I'm hoping is happening with the Department of Justice is they're acting in the best interest of U.S. national security and the U.S. Constitution, as opposed to whatever bizarre, freakish goals MI5, Mossad, and the CIA may have had on their own. We've already seen evidence, clear and convincing evidence, that the CIA was directly involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, and very likely Bobby Kennedy, and very likely Martin Luther King Jr. So they've committed murder for decades to achieve their goals. The CIA has been bringing in heroin into this country as a fundraising thing for themselves, unaccountable money. A very dear friend of mine was involved in that inadvertently in Vietnam. When he was ready to leave, he was down in Mekong Delta where I was with Special Forces. One of his team members said, here's your share, Bob. And it was a bag full of U.S. $100 bills, greenbacks. And he says, what's this for? He said, what do you think all those trips to Cambodia were about anyway?
Yeah.
He had no idea. He was involved in drug running. He was just a guy with a machine gun. This has been going on for decades. The CIA involved in nefarious activities. And more recently in Afghanistan, over the poppy fields, we had U.S. military guarding in poppy fields. Another source of unaccountable money for the CIA.
And Afghanistan after Vietnam, obviously.
Hopefully, this is what I'm not sure Pam Bondi had any idea that how how deep the rabbit hole went when she got involved with this, and how complex it was, and how much at risk national security was. But she's finding out, it's a on-the-job training for her, and she's probably being briefed by people who know about how serious the matter is. And that's where we are. She's holding back this Epstein list because it's a lot more important than horny men spending time with underage girls. The importance of this goes to national security and literally hundreds of millions of dollars being stolen from this government. And that's what she's dealing with.
What's your take on the alleged suicide in Australia of the Epstein victim, Virginia Giuffre? I'm not sure if that's the correct pronunciation of her last name, but supposedly she committed suicide after posting that she is not suicidal. Right, you know, right. Supposedly she got hit by a bus, and what's your take on her as a victim slash witness on this?
Well, unless you're intoxicated or stoned on drugs, you're not going to get hit by a bus. That just doesn't happen. But if you're standing near a busy street where buses are going by and somebody pushes you in front of the bus at the last moment, that's more likely. I don't know any more details about it than what you just listed there. All right. But it's a common thing for people who feel they're at risk of being murdered to say they're not suicidal. In fact, I think Alex Jones said that recently himself, and the guy
with James O'Keefe, yeah,
James O'Keefe, and I'm looking forward to the James O'Keefe story being revealed. Will it come out this week? Do you think? I don't know.
Well, last week he said 7 days. Okay. T minus 7 days or whatever. If it doesn't, this is the stuff that hurts our credibility. If things are not released, and. John, let me ask you as an investigator, because I know you've been in situations like this. What would be the reason for not releasing if you have? Oh, we got a big story. We got this big disclosure, but it's going to be in 7 days. Why?
Well, there could be more details that need to be researched. O'Keefe has an excellent reputation as a first-class journalist doing great work. The company he started was taken over. He left. He started his own company doing these really great investigative reports. And I don't know the man personally, but based on the volume of work he's done so far, I trust him to do what he claimed to do. If there's something that delays it, I accept it as something that couldn't be helped because there was more details needed to be worked out. Any kind of important investigation is going to have many moving parts that are hard to keep up with. And when something changes, you need to change what you got to report. So that theoretically, that's where he is.
Okay. All right. So yeah, I think, folks in the chat, can you help me out with this? Because they're the smartest people I know listening to this show live. When are the 7 days up? In the chat, if you can let me know when the 7 days. James O'Keefe saying T-minus 7 days. When are the 7 days up? Okay, so I'll wait on. I'm about 10 seconds behind on the chat anyway, so we'll wait on that. And we'll be watching for that. Very interesting indeed. Wednesday is, according to JJ. I'll call you JJ. It's very difficult for me to read the print. Thank you. And then some of the Steelers' mom, I want to say Thursday. And then somebody else says the 7th. Wow, so that would be Wednesday. I'm going to go with Wednesday. Because I think I remember that, Wednesday.
Go ahead. O'Keefe has a reputation as being a stand-up guy, doing great reporting, very truthful, very accurate. And let's just get through the day Wednesday and see where we are and go from there.
Yeah, it's wow. All right. And for him to say, I've never met James O'Keefe. I talked to him on the phone once. I think this back like 12, 14 years ago. Laura Loomer was working for him. That's how long ago it was.
Right.
Working with him. So he seemed to have his investigative skills together. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And he posted today that it starts Wednesday. All right. So there we have it. So you and I, John, will be watching beginning Wednesday, and I'll call. In fact, I'll even give you a call if it's something that we should talk about even further.
Well, he's not one to make flippant statements, Mr. O'Keefe, and he claims this is the most important story or two stories that he's ever done, which certainly gets my attention.
Yeah, it's gotten mine too. And I was able to communicate with a third. Well, I know Alex Jones knows what this is, and he assures, I've been assured that this is not hype. Okay, that's all I'll say. Do I know exactly with precision what it is? I don't. I think I might have an idea, but I don't. I don't know for sure, so I'm not going to say anything at this point.
Well, it's only a couple of days. We'll find out.
Yeah, we will. And folks, that's what I love about John. Again, given his age, his wisdom, his experience, the fact that he's worked so many cases, it kind of adds balance to my knee-jerk, get the crap out there, let's go, I'd be throwing
things. I used to be like that, but I found out it didn't make things go any faster.
I know. it doesn't, by the way, I got to tell you. Yeah. Even when you grab people by the lapels, which I don't recommend doing, different story, different day. Anyway, all right. So here's what I want to show you this. And John, before I get into this, how do people get on your mailing list? Because you've sent some stuff out recently.
Well, it's I'm not soliciting people to get on my mailing list.
Right.
The list that you are on is also the guests I have Monday through Friday. A fellow I served with in military intelligence, and that's it. It's a pretty short list.
Okay. All right.
So well, yeah.
Then I'll just say this. You've got to listen to John Moore Monday through Friday. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com because he's got some just phenomenal information. Not necessarily, breaking information, I should say, but not necessarily known to all of us. It's through his show, it's through his interviews, it's his contacts, and his own research, which he does a great job. And I've never gotten anything from John, whether it be by listening to him or by receiving it on the air or off the air too, that hasn't been dead nuts accurate. So I just want to say thank you for that. So I got two things I want to get your opinion on, because you've been ahead of the curve on this. Three things, actually. We'll just go with two things right now. President Trump signed an executive order banning gain-of-function research. I think it was today. RFK Jr. was there, and he made a statement. May I play this for you?
Let's hear it. I'm looking forward to it. Please.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this.
I didn't,
John.
No.
Okay. Eric the Tech, this is cut one. And folks listening at home, playing along at home, this is video one in the show notes, or the link will be at video number one in the show notes at HagmanPI.com. Here it is.
This is an historic day, the end of gain-of-function research funding by the federal government and also controls by private corporations on gain-of-function studies. This was the kind of study that was engaged in by the United States military and intelligence agencies beginning in 1947. By 1969, the CIA said that they had reached nuclear equivalency, that they could kill the entire U.S. population for 29 cents a person. That year, President Nixon went to Fort Detrick and announced a unilateral end to this kind of research, what they called dual-use research, research that was for vaccination and also for military purposes. He then persuaded over 180 countries to sign the Bioweapons Charter in 1973. That basically ended gain-of-function research around the globe until 2002. Or 2001, after the anthrax attacks, we passed the Patriot Act, and the Patriot Act had a provision, a little-known provision in it, that said that although the Bioweapons Charter is still in effect, and the Geneva Convention is still in effect, U.S. federal officials who violate it cannot be prosecuted. And that relaunched a bioweapons arms race, and that was driven by gain-of-function research. In 2014, three of those bugs escaped from U.S. labs, and President Obama declared a moratorium on future use, and instead a lot of that research was moved offshore to the Wuhan lab.
Okay, before I ask you about this, you know, he mentions Obama in there. Let's not forget Obama's role with Nunn and Lugar when Obama became the junior senator for Illinois. And what was Obama appointed to? What was his task? He was the only junior senator to be a part of the Lugar Commission, and non-Lugar Commission, whatever you want to call it, on disarmament. And he was the one, along with Lugar, and I have the video saved back in, I think it was 05, maybe? Somewhere around that time period, where he went to Russia to talk about the nuclear disarmament. But also, within that realm, there was some discussion about bioweapons. I did not know that before. And that was the same period of time when he got stopped in Perm because of by Russian authorities, because there was a problem with his U.S. passport. Anyway, that aside, John, we funded, the U.S. funded gain of function, and this was made okay by the Patriot Act. And if you jump ahead, I've got Dr. Naomi Wolf talking about, well, I'm sorry, I've got, who is this? Well, let's jump to video four, and then this is Tulsi Gabbard. I'm sorry, and then I'll get your full statement on the other side.
Okay, sounds good.
This is Tulsi Gabbard in show prep. This will be video four. U.S. funded biolabs in Ukraine, and remember and thank folks how long those biolabs were in Ukraine. Think the timing matters. Obama. Barack Hussein Obama, Biolabs, Lugar, Nunn. Got to go back in time. Here's video four, cut four. It's a minute long.
The reason why this is so important is not just what happened in the past. It's because this gain-of-function research is happening in biolabs around the world. I got attacked, and I think you saw this. We've probably talked about it on your show before, when I warned against U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine when the Russia-Ukraine war kicked off for this very reason. Who knows what kinds of pathogens are in these labs, and if released, could create another COVID like pandemic. And for that, I was called a Russian asset. You're, you know, trumpeting Putin's talking points, all of this nonsense, simply for speaking the truth and stating facts that, by the way, are still on U.S. Embassy Ukraine's website today about how the U.S. has funded these biolabs in Ukraine. But in order to, my point is, in order to prevent another COVID-like pandemic or another major health incident that could affect us in the world, we have to end this gain-of-function research and provide the evidence that shows exactly why and how it's in our best interest, the American people's best interest, to bring about an end to it.
So, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. John, you've been all over this since day one.
I have.
Your takes on both segments. Go ahead.
Okay. The Patriot Act was drafted well before 9/11/01. 9/11/01 was the pretext to get it to pass with almost no opposition. Horrible piece of legislation, never should have been passed. It hurts many, many aspects of our republic. And making, well, by international law, first of all, biological weapons are illegal to manufacture, research, develop. It's a matter of international law that the Patriot Act cannot overcome international law. It's a crime against humanity to research, manufacture, fabricate biological weapons, which is going on right now. Now, as far as Tulsi Gabbard, I need to correct her. She still refers to the COVID illness as a pandemic. It killed 0.3% of the people that got it. And that 0.3% were all within a year of death from something anyway. That's not a pandemic.
Right.
That's not a pandemic. That's not a pandemic.
No.
And calling it one is certainly incorrect to do so. I need to get this documentary out on my website. I've been putting it off for a couple of days. A well-done documentary.
Epic Times? Is it the one from Epic Times or no?
No, it was done by another group, but it's very well done. And I need to get it up there along with, and I already have the statement from Catherine Austin Fitz, which we need to talk about tonight, by the way. It was a worldwide plan involving the governments, the media, the military to create fear in people's minds and their hearts, to get them to be fearful of a non-issue, and to ultimately get them to accept and go for the vaccines, which was the real goal. So it's an unfortunate thing that high-level people such as Tulsi Gabbard are still referring to the COVID illness is a pandemic because it breathes further life into something that simply wasn't a pandemic. But let's do a segue to Catherine Austin Fitz. Are you ready to do that?
Yes, absolutely. I saw that interview, but the recent interview, I think, that was with Tucker?
Right. Well, both. Okay. One with Tucker and one done 2 years ago.
Okay.
They're both. Both very important. Yeah. The one with Tucker is the most recent one done in the last 10 to 14 days or so.
Yeah.
First of all, Catherine Austin Fitz is the highest, the person with the highest level involvement in the U.S. government that I'm aware of who's gone public with what I've known and what you've known for years, that government's been preparing since 1979 for an extinction level event. She claims that doing her research, and she's a good researcher, that $21 trillion has been secretly used by the U.S. government to build shelters, 170 shelters, both underground and under the ocean, connected by high-speed rail, to prepare for the extinction-level event, which, of course, has been my message for going back to the year 2000 when I first started looking into these matters and learning that the U.S. government was doing so. But it's very significant when somebody who had her level of involvement with the federal government goes public, as opposed to John Moore or Doug Hagman or Alex Jones. This is a woman who was assistant secretary for HUD, which gave her a security clearance and access that most people can only dream of. The fact that she's gone public with this, I think, is very significant. And I'll be talking a lot more about it, Doug, as these weeks and months go by.
Okay. Excuse me. It sounds good. And in the Tucker Carlson interview, she also kind of stunned him. And I don't believe he was stunned. The guy is a smart guy. He knows what's going on about the deep underground military bases. I didn't know. Yeah, come on, man.
I said, it's one thing for Alex Jones to talk about him, but it's another for somebody who was that level of federal government to be talking about it. Because her credibility is excellent, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She worked as Treasury under Bush?
HUD. She was Assistant Secretary of HUD.
HUD, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. It was, yes, 100%. So I'm, yeah, and you're right about the pandemic, using that word. Obviously, that instills fear among everybody. I don't know whether you saw the more recent, I don't want to say breaking news, as if we didn't know this was happening, but on the Liberty Daily today, I think maybe it's still up there, I don't know. A scientist engineered chimeric bird flu virus with weaponized traits. Oh,
yeah. It's still there. It's still there. Yeah.
An alarming gain of function study. You know what would stop this? Obviously, number one, stop all the funding, right. and have Congress pass a flipping law to make it illegal.
It's already illegal by international law. Already.
By international law. But I mean, for us to see, I want to see, here's, and forgive me, John, but I want to, no, don't, I don't care. I want to see people once tried and convicted for crimes against humanity and crimes of murder, mass murder, genocide, democide. I want to see their bodies, lifeless bodies being hanged from lampposts all along Pennsylvania Avenue, from Fauci to Daszak to Barrick to everyone involved in this, to the Bat Lady, to the Bat Lady's extended family. I mean, I want to burn their houses down and kill their pets. And I love pets. We'll spare the pets.
Well,
help me, John.
Well,
help me.
There's, I don't have the woman's name, but there was a woman in Europe. She was a teenage, literally an 18-year-old secretary at a concentration camp, making the coffee, answering the phone, typing the letters. She was charged about 2 or 3 years ago with war crimes and convicted and given a suspended sentence. She was, I think, 90-something years old. Which, if we use that as precedence, that means that everybody at Pfizer, everybody in the media, everybody in the government, everybody in the military involved in this, down to the custodian, is guilty of crimes against humanity. This is the worst crime in human history. What's taking place right now on the 5th day of May, 2025, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, eventually tens of millions will die as a consequence of the COVID-19 vaccination clot shots. And This young, going back to the 18-year-old secretary in the concentration camp in Europe, she didn't commit any crimes. She was at the outer edge of the men who were committing the crimes. She had no ability to stop them or say anything that would do any good, but she did type the letters, make the coffee, answer the phone, like secretaries have always done. That doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't make her guilty of a war crime, but the court can find her guilty. And if we take that as precedence for what's been going on now since the year 2000, we have tens of thousands of people worldwide involved in these crimes against humanity, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. We do. And yeah, tell me how you really feel, Mr. Drummond. I have such a disdain, because I watched people, obviously, as everyone here did. We watched people fall for trust their government, you know, trust the experts, and I am science. And how dare these pieces of human garbage, and I make no apologies, how dare they knowingly push something that is going to cause such death, disability, and even worse, this cult. I mean, people talk about, oh, the cult of Donald Trump. No, the cult of Fauci, the cult of these science experts. How dare they? How dare they? So, I don't know, brother. I really have a hard time. If you have injured a family member, a friend of mine, or killed a family member or friend of mine because of your clot shots, your slab jabs, I no remorse on my end for you, for them. John, I didn't mean to take you off. I get passionate about this, and you're so level-headed. Me, I'm just like, screw this. Let's just throw down and, you know, get it on. But my question to you, okay, are we going to see anything happen from all of this?
Well, what needs to happen immediately is for Bobby Kane Jr. to immediately halt the distribution of these COVID vaccinations. They're still giving to innocent children who can't say no, people who don't know any better. And we're making these children sterile. We're looking at giving these children maybe half the lifetime they would have otherwise. Every week we find something new, horrific aspect to these COVID vaccinations, and you're on the list, so you get them. And those updates are at my website in the COVID panel, by the way. I find it fascinating and scary as to how many different horrific things can be in one injection. But there seems to be no end to it, what the scientists who are researching it are finding out. And the distribution, these vaccines need to be made illegal immediately. There's no doubt in my mind.
I suspect RFK Jr. may just do that. HHS has the power to stop the distribution of those shots. Am I right?
As far as I know. Okay. If he can't do it, the president can. Between the two of them, they can get it done.
All right.
It needs to happen. It needs to happen ASAP. Every day, there's more innocent children being vaccinated with this poison. Yeah, that's another life lost. There are lives, I don't know, what is it, 1,000 people a day? I don't know. It's a big number. Each human life has value, and these vaccinations need to be made illegal immediately.
100% behind you on that. And if I may, John, because of the extended time I have you, and folks, I want to thank John Moore for being the guest tonight, giving his time. I mean, doing 3 hours of radio early in the morning and then coming on an evening, late evening show. God bless that man. Even if he's an hour behind me, God bless him. Okay, and I'm going to thank him, and I would urge everyone to go to thelibertyman.com and support his sponsors, support him, support the radio show, and do what you can, because he's a hell of a great guy, and I'm glad to have him tonight. But with your permission, just to kind of put the icing on the cake on this one, I saw this, and this is a 15-minute clip. Obviously, we're not going to play 15 minutes. But with your permission, we'll play a couple of minutes of Dr. Naomi Wolf. I can't even get the words up. This is cut three, and she's reacting to the gain of function research in big pharma EOs. We won't touch on the latter, but the former, gain of function research, get her take on this. Very interesting, to have her come out and obviously being a proponent against or a proponent for stopping the shots as well as the exposure to what is taking place. But here's cut three in the Hagman PI show notes. Here it is.
Gain of function research. Gain of function research is a type of biomedical research where pathogens are adulterated, viruses are adulterated to make them more potent or to change the way that they function. Many people believe that gain-of-function research was one of the key causes of the COVID pandemic that struck us in the last decade. What this executive order does, first of all, it provides powerful new tools to enforce the ban on federal funding for gain-of-function research abroad. It also strengthens other oversight mechanisms related to that issue and creates an overarching strategy to ensure that biomedical research in general is being conducted safely and in a way that ultimately protects human health more.
It's a big deal. It could have been that we wouldn't have had the problem we had.
A lot of people say that, sir.
If we had this done earlier. Thank you.
Gain of function, the whole story about how Fauci went back over after the Obama administration National Security Council restricted the use of gain of function, how he weaseled his way back over to EOB in December of 2017. Of course, Tom Fitton said today those pardons don't matter. Go ahead and investigate them, indict them, try them, and then when you come down to the fact of giving them their prison sentence, then you bring up the pardons and see if they're even operative. He's adamant about Fauci. Naomi Wolf joins us now. Naomi, all the investigations about all of it, including today, President Trump signs us about gain of function. Are you happy where these actually stand, given all the, either malfeasance and or incompetence, criminal activity, I don't know, across the board and so much of Make America Healthy? It's the reason this part of the movement caught on fire, ma'am.
I've, come a long way with the posse and all of you. And, today I'm happy to say this is what I voted for. This is exactly what MAHA voted for, what MAGA voted for. And it's also like mind blowing, Steve, that you've got people who were targeted as the most outcast, marginalized dissidents, Dr. Bhattacharya, RFK Jr., Marty Makary, standing next to the president, and even more incredible, since they've been in office, they're issuing policies that are so commonsensical. For instance, let's have actual trials of the drugs that you inject into your child. And now, with the gain of function research, let's end a horrifically dangerous, damaging.
Okay, but hold on. The media is telling me. Exactly, because we had the deputy on that's going to do the trials. They said this is more Bobby Kennedy voodoo. This is more crazy Naomi Wolf in War Room, that they're actually doing the trials for the vaccines the wrong way. And we're just doing it because we're all anti-vax nutters. Your response, ma'am?
I think RFK Jr. answers that really well when that issue comes up. I mean, it's the science we learned in eighth grade. He's just... when people understand what he's been trying to say for over a decade, that vaccines come to market not only without any liability protection, right? They can do anything, you can't sue them, but also without proper trials, parents' heads explode. And so he's just making that case over and over. And of course, the pharma-funded spokesmodels are going to say that's voodoo science and try to confuse people. But I think the American public is done being gaslit like that. And I think many people understand what RFK Jr. and Dr. Bhattacharya is saying because they learned in eighth grade what a double-blind study is, what real science is. And they want it before they put substances in their kids.
Okay, you can stop it right there, Eric. Folks, watch the entire clip. In fact, you can watch the entire episode with Steve Bannon and Naomi Wolf. The first part, of course, was President Trump signing the EO, and along with RFK Jr. being there. I guess, I don't know. John, I guess really it doesn't necessarily require any commentary. It is what it is. It is what she said it was, what Bannon and RFK Jr. said it was. But the fact of the matter is, I think more and more people are waking up. And I do think what Tom Fitton said from Judicial Watch, and I had that clip, I don't have it in the show prep, where, hey, let's just file charges and worry about the pardon later. And he made sense. I don't know if you happen to see that clip. But I
haven't yet, no.
Very interesting concept, or very interesting approach by Tom Fitton, who I believe him and Mike Davis and others, with Tom Fitton with Judicial Watch, Article 3 Project, Mike Davis. I got to say, they make a lot of sense. And I just hope that something is done in honor of the victims of the injections. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I hope it's not too little too late. This gain of function, they talked about earlier in the show how the CIA claimed they could kill every human being in America for 29 cents per person. And that's been half a century ago.
Yeah. So
it's been half a century of continued research, development, and making of these horrific poisons. I'm not sure that cutting it off is going to make any difference, because they've had half a century to perfect the poison. And of course, cutting off the United States is not going to cut it off from China or Russia, both of which have massive biological weapons programs. An excellent book that documents the Russian biological program has a one-word title, Biohazard, by Ken Alibek, who was he won all kinds of awards for his research in biological weapons. So I applaud U.S. stopping it on one hand. On the other, these other countries, which have no scruples, obviously Russia and China and possibly others, are going to continue making better poisons that will kill more efficiently and more cheaply.
100%.
It's a sad situation that these things even exist, but that's the nature of human beings, is to make these kinds of poisons, isn't it?
Sadly, it is. And you know what, John, this is kind of off topic, maybe. I don't know. I mentioned about the history of things. I mentioned Barack Hussein Obama. But if you go back even further, and this, I submitted my investigative report, my column for Wisconsin Christian News last week. And I focused on the Clinton era. And the one thing I found, and it started with the Clinton era and then moved forward. But one thing I found in my interest in homicides, okay, your interest and your involvement in homicides, I mean, the investigation, not the conducting of homicides, but the investigation of homicides. There were three individuals that two associated with Clinton and one associated with, well, all three associated with Clinton or Clintons: Vince Foster, Ron Brown, and Seth Rich. To me, when you look back, especially during the 90s, the communist infiltration, the ideology, and the drivers of what we're seeing today, including the warmongers, as well as, you know, being sold out to the communist Chinese, including the pharmaceuticals and bioweapon research, that all began under the Clinton regime. And had Ron Brown lived, and I believe Ron Brown died of a single gunshot wound to his head, I think that that's been borne out pretty well. Had he lived
after the plane crash, you mean?
Yes. At St. Joseph's Peak, as a matter of fact, I have a picture. A family member took a St. Joseph's Peak, but he would have survived his injuries. He had some chemical burns. He had a broken pelvis, but he would have survived that, and some superficial trauma. But had he survived, they were leveraging. Reno was threatening to put his son Michael in prison.
Right.
And anyway, Ron Brown was a conduit, was a bagman for Clinton and the communist Chinese. And the reason I mention that now is when you look at those three homicides. And again, Rich was a homicide. Foster, suicide my ass.
Right.
And Brown, definitely one can make a case for a homicide. When you look at those three were very, in my view, very pivotal homicides that advanced the communist agenda to where we are today. And that includes everything we've talked about up to this point. But I digress. Kind of a plug for Wisconsin Christian News, folks. Make sure you subscribe as well as take care of them as you can. Go ahead, John.
Well, let's refresh people's memory. Ron Brown was on a U.S. military aircraft that was landing in a foreign country. the piece of equipment that told the pilot the correct way to land the airplane had been turned off, and another one placed on the side of a mountain to redirect the aircraft to a disaster. The plane did, in fact, crash. He did, in fact, survive the crash and would have been healed, but he was shot with a pistol at close range to assassinate him. What the mistake Ron Brown made was going public with what he was going to do before he did it, and they assassinated or murdered him to keep him quiet. Vince Foster was Hillary Clinton's secret lover. Had information that, if exposed, could have been a disaster for the Clinton administration. And I don't know if he was upset with Hillary, had a change of heart. We simply don't know. But he was
with Foster. If I can just add this, yeah. Because I know how thorough you are on your investigations. Vince Foster, his clothing had a lot of carpet fibers. And I went to Fort Marcy Park right after, I'm going to say right after the FBI got done messing around in Fort Marcy Park after he was found. His body had a lot of carpet fibers. So the prevailing theory, when I went there and I spoke with some of the people involved in the both the investigation as well as two witnesses, they were saying that they thought he was transported through the back of the park, wrapped in a rug carpet,
right,
and deposited where he was found. There was hardly any blood stains at all.
He pretty much stopped bleeding once your heart stops, and his body was laid out in a nice, comfortable position, which somebody commits suicide with a pistol. Their arms and legs are all askew, not laying out like you're laying in a lounge chair.
And you've seen your share. I've seen my share of both homicides, suicides. Things do happen. All right? I mean, there are sometimes, but as a rule, it's not like that. Go ahead.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
The journalist who was murdered, he had come across information that was considered radioactive, and he had to be murdered to keep him quiet. He was in charge of that newspaper that was it wasn't Brighteon. What's that other? What was the publication he was associated with?
Who are we talking about?
Well, I'm talking about somebody else. Never mind.
Okay. All right.
The journalist. The Clintons have a reputation for murdering people that could harm their goal of making millions of dollars illegally and the communist agenda that they've been supporting for decades. If you get in the way of that, you get murdered. That's simply what happens with the Clintons.
And that kind of brings us kind of right back around to the Epstein list. And by the way, folks, I understand this, and I think I might have put this in the article too. The Epstein list is not a list. It's not a file. It's pallets of both documents as well as hardware and photos, images. There's a lot there. Hard drives. Did I say hard drives? Anyway, hard drives. So it's just not papers. It's an array of things. So, but anyway, it kind of brings us back around because the Clintons, both Hillary and Bill, were Epsteinites. I don't know. And Hillary's, this also links into Pizzagate, ill-named, but nonetheless, where she is involved, and it goes to Haiti with Laura Silsby. Remember that, folks. Look, man, you have to have like a list. I think notes, because things happen, and we forget things. But man, I'll tell you what, all of this stuff, I hope, is coming out. Coming out now.
Well, you've mentioned a boatload of investigations here, to say the least, here, Doug. The most recent update I saw on Pizzagate is that it was and may still be real.
Oh, I can guarantee it was real, except for the two individuals, excuse me, two ladies that interviewed me in the Rolling Stone and just smeared the crap out of me in the Rolling Stone magazine, which, by the way, I'm going to stop there before I get sued again. So anyway, I can't afford attorneys, you know. So go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
All right. Well, let's talk about some more positive things here. Assuming World War III, which is now being fought, quite frankly, doesn't get any worse. I agree with President Trump that we may be at the beginning of a new golden age, United States. There's a headline here at the Liberty Daily that China is moving manufacturing to the United States to avoid tariffs. That's the goal of the tariffs, is to get manufacturing back in this country. And so it's already happening. There may be some difficult times for the next year or so while new manufacturing is moving to this country, and there may be some supply disruptions with pharmaceuticals, for example. But after we're past that, which I think may take a year or so, we'll have pharmaceuticals manufactured in this country, cars manufactured in this country, and many items that are now being made overseas, made here in this country. And the wealth of any country involves mines, factories, and farms. And, of course, the huge number of jobs will be in manufacturing. And the factories. There'll be new ways to manufacture involving AI and robotics, but there's still going to be lots of jobs that don't exist now in the closed factories all over the country. Lots of square feet of factories waiting to be filled up, aren't there, Doug?
Yes. You know, it's a shame how the U.S. was guided from manufacturing. And that does include pharmaceuticals. Now, we've always had, I think, at least maybe a small double-digit percentage being manufactured overseas, or at least some of the components coming from overseas, but not to the point where we were under the Biden regime, and well, even before that, but where we still are at this point, until things get properly corrected, fully dependent upon China for antibiotics, for our, for some of the IV stuff that are being used. So we have to get that back in the U.S. That's a national security issue.
It is.
Is it not?
It is absolutely a national security.
Right.
You know, where T-shirts are made is not a matter of national security, but where life-saving pharmaceuticals are made is definitely a matter of national security. Anything involving electronics that is used by the military is a matter of national security. It's been years ago, I found out through my own independent research that we have U.S. military aircraft filled up with circuit boards made in China. Now, how crazy is that? But that's it's a fact. But along the same lines, I've learned that the Douglas Boeing is putting the X-15, it's a EX or XE version being manufactured, take the place of the A-10 Warthog. The F-15 is an excellent platform that is very upgradable. I've known probably 20 engineers that work on the F-15 in my hometown. Just before, this is worthwhile telling, just before President Trump left office at the end of his term in 2020, he ordered the purchase of, I think, 12 or 15 new F-15s, which there had been no American purchase of F-15s for probably 20 plus years. It turns out that the performance difference between the F-15 and the F-35, the F-15, which is the latest upgrades, and the F-35, are almost non-existent. Plus a big bonus. You can fly the F-15 in a thunderstorm, and you can't the F-35. Did you know that, Doug?
You know, you said that before.
Oh, it's true. Yeah.
I know it's true because I did some research because
What Moore said can't possibly be true. The most expensive jet fighter ever built by any military can't be flown in a thunderstorm. So you researched it yourself, didn't you?
Well, yes. Now, it's not functional. Okay. I guess you could fly it. It's just not functional. So I don't know what that means, but that sticks in my mind.
It means stuff doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean.
What's the point of building the most expensive jet fighter in the history of mankind if stuff doesn't work in a thunderstorm?
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. excuse me. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, okay. Man, I'll tell you what. Maybe we should sell. Continue. I'm just babbling here.
We got a complete program that President Trump had 4 years to figure out what went wrong and what went right with that first term. And I mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again. If he had taken office 4 years ago, his time would have been ate up with massive, all these civil and criminal lawsuits, both against him. He still had all these swamp creatures in his administration. He has admitted publicly that it was a mistake that first term to take the advice of lobbyists as to who was going to be in these critical positions. He knows that now. He didn't know it then. Right. So he's had 4 years to figure out what went wrong and what went right that first term. And this time he came in with guns blazing, almost literally.
I mean, he hit the ground running. And I guess this is why I expected more from the cabinets, especially from Bondi and from Patel. Patel, I've been hearing things about him being seen in nightclubs and stuff, places around D.C., social places, as opposed to inside the bureau headquarters. But okay, but that's why I was expecting a little bit more, a little bit sooner. But then. Go ahead.
Well, I know that a lot of meetings take place off-site in Washington, D.C., where they can have a bit of privacy otherwise.
Yes.
That's easily could be what's going on there. Everybody who goes into the FBI headquarters is photographed by paparazzi and so forth, where a meeting in a dark corner of a nightclub someplace could be a more of a private event. Mr. Patel has to meet with all kinds of men and women from every walk of life to do what he's doing. It's an incredible undertaking. Dan Bongino, I'm a big fan of Dan. His heart's in the right place. He's more than smart enough to do what needs to be done. He's seen all the mistakes being made. And I think he's more than qualified to do what he's doing, backing up Patel and what he's doing.
Speaking of that, speaking of that, as well as we talked about Tom Homan before, look, I met Tom and I met Mr. Homan, because I'm going to tell you, he's a very intimidating guy, but he's very sincere. And I looked him in the eyes, and you can tell a lot from people's eyes. And a brief conversation, interviewed. In fact, I wonder if I got to check Eric the Tech if we have that interview of Tom Homan from 20, whatever it was, 17, 18. Anyway, here's my question to you, John. You've got AOC out there really teaching illegals in this country how to evade and avoid ICE. You've got sanctuary states, sanctuary cities, sanctuary counties, all these sanctuary people. And Tom Homan was asked about AOC or about, you know, mayors and other people in charge. Do you plan, Tom, Mr. Homan, do you plan on going after these people? And he just kind of smiled and said, well, wait and see what comes next. So, John, do you think it's possible or probable that we might see the arrest of a mayor of a big city, somebody from council, somebody from even a state government get arrested.
I think it's very possible if they're violating federal law, which I'm sure many of them are and have and will. Of course, they should be indictments issued and arrest warrants issued as well, and these people arrested. There's also a very good possibility of, well, let's look at the 5-star hotel rooms in New York City. Money changing hands between hotel owners and the government with percentages being going to the people scheduling the rooms. So let's say you're in charge of housing immigrants in New York City, and you talk to the 5-star hotel manager, and you say, "Well, if I fill up all these rooms at a higher rate than you normally get anyway, I want my percentage as a commission for doing this, a sales commission." And do you think that kind of thing might just have happened, Doug? Of course it could.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, money changing hands, and of course, the mayor would get his percentage. The mayor, in this case, being the big guy, when you've got tens of millions of dollars changing hands in these kinds of transactions, people are going to have their hands out for their commission, for their piece of the action, aren't they?
100% they are. And the NGOs, the insane amount, the insane number of NGOs, at the top, of course, HIAS, HIAS, Catholic Charities, the entirety of the Jewish
Red Cross,
100%, yeah,
Lutheran Family Services,
exactly. So. The rot is deep, it's systemic, and we have to really get rid of all of this. And we have to, but see, you can expose, and John, look, I'm a big proponent of exposure, but unless and until we see people being perp walked, the American public are going to lose faith, they're going to lose hope. And I can't say I blame them, but.
No, not at all. Not at all, and I'm not concerned about this. It's only been a tad more than 100 days for legal matters of this level of importance, this level of complexity. I don't expect much to happen in the first 3 months. 6 to 12 months is more my time frame.
Yeah, and you are, as usual, correct in this. I'm again, the complexity and unscrewing.
Well, let's talk about this a bit.
Okay. And
if I was given this assignment, here's what I would do. I would investigate to find low-level functionaries, administrative people, who were committing crimes on the face of it and reporting to higher-ups in the State Department, for example, or USAID. I would bring them in for questioning. I would let them know that if they cooperate and give us evidence to go after the higher-ups, that we'll cut a deal. And instead of a federal felony, they might get a federal misdemeanor and 6 months in a federal camp, which has no fence, by the way, instead of hard time in a real prison with a real fence. Under those conditions, most people will spill their guts to get the deal. And that's not going to be in the public domain. There's not going to be any press releases. It's all going to be happening covertly behind the scenes with no public attention. And I have every reason to believe that's what's taking place right now, Doug.
Okay. And look, I'm going to give this administration, I'm going to give Cash Patel, Dan Bongino, even Pam Bondi, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But if we get to the point, I mean, look, the midterms, that's too long. But if we get to, I'm going to say, the fall of this year without a lot of things taking place. And I got to tell you, John, you know, there's something really, really wrong, really wrong.
Well, there will be. Of course, President Trump is on, he cannot deviate from because deviation from would put him at risk and put the Republic at risk. This man is, you know, he's almost exactly 1 year older than me. And when you get to be our age, you start having different thoughts about what's important, where your life's been, where you want it to go with whatever time you have left. And that's where this man is. He knows that everything he's doing will be part of the history of this republic forever, basically.
Yeah, I believe that.
And what he's doing will retard the New World Order for at least a generation, at least. People say he's a globalist. Well, he's causing more problems for the globalists than anybody has forever, as far as I can tell.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I don't think I've ever seen the election of a president having the global ramifications than President Trump. Can you remember any?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I know when Kennedy, when I was in high school when he was elected, my last year of junior high, but anyway, there were photographs of President Kennedy in remote villages of Africa and South America and Asia. He was popular worldwide, but it didn't change that much. But what President Trump is doing is giving leaders around the world, especially Eastern Europe and some parts of South America, maybe even Africa, the gumption to do some similar things. And that's a good thing. I've never seen that before, ever. You're right.
Yeah, it's so... I take, well, even excuse me, even to the extent the Vatican. I mean, the what's going on and by the way, folks, watch what's going on there with respect to the cardinals electing the new pope and all of this. I mean, there's even that impact by President Trump on the Vatican as well. All of the globalists. So you're 100% right. Folks, John Moore, theliberatedman.com. Make sure the link to his website will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com. Make sure you follow him and listen and tune in to his radio show. If not live, then certainly by archive. The links are at theliberatedman.com. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. It's. I've used the analogy. I feel like a cat in a room full of mice when it comes to observing these matters. I mean, it's truly phenomenal at every aspect of this presidency, and the majority of these presidencies have been pretty ho hum in terms of what they do. This guy's on a mission, and he's on a mission to save the republic. And he's bringing manufacturing back to this country, which is already happening. Getting our military straightened out where these mentally ill men and women will no longer be serving. And in fact, the mentally ill men who believe they're women, the mentally ill women who believe they're men, can't serve overseas because their complex medical conditions they can't. So why are they in there in the first place if they can't even go overseas to fight on behalf of our country? So he's getting that squared away. I hope it extends to the military academies, where we'll no longer see women in there because they can never have and never will meet the same physical standards as the men. All the standards were either changed or eliminated to allow the women to be there in the first place. And the women have served with honor and distinction in the medical corps for more than a century, and that's where they should be in a place where they're safe. Right. And can do what women do best, which is give medical care to the people who are injured. The $7,000 tax incentive for the electric vehicles is going away, which means the electric vehicles will go away. Thank goodness.
And
there's so much to this, what this man is doing. And I applaud him. He has the energy of a guy half his age, quite frankly, to see what he's doing. It's just amazing. Yeah, high-energy guy, very bright guy. He has put together a good team without there may be a couple of people we could question that may be swamp creatures, but on the whole, his cabinet appointments have been right on target, I think. What do you think, sir?
I've got to say this. I've been watching and listening to and following Laura Loomer on the vetting process, the people being elected, or I'm sorry, appointed to different sub-cabinet positions.
Right.
And Laura, as well as her expose on the judges, having so many conflicts. Laura Loomer, folks, I would urge you to follow her on X, other social media platforms. So she's pointed out a lot of these insertions of people that are conflicted into the cabinet positions. And she should really be in charge of the vetting process of President Trump. But having said that, my other concern as well is the judicial coup that we're seeing and the conflicts that are obvious. Where is Speaker Johnson, who could initiate impeachment proceedings against these judges? Why haven't we seen that?
That's a good question. I met Laura Loomer at a conference, had a few minutes to speak with her. She's a brilliant woman, does great work. And maybe it's just a matter of it hasn't been the timing. I don't know. These judges are acting against President Trump. They will be overturned at the appellate level and surely at the Supreme Court level. What these judges are doing cannot be allowed to stand. They're making rulings that should apply only to the case at hand, not to the entire country. And that's always the way it's been. There are activist judges appointed by Obama and Clinton and Biden that are acting outside the scope of their authority. President is pretending like they have the authority in order to be straight with history. He doesn't have to, but he is. And he's going to let the process work out to where the courts of appeals smash these judges' verdicts into the ground, and President Trump's agenda will move forward.
All right. Excuse me. All right. That's I find that very interesting. And the clip that I have next addresses this issue. Eric the Tech, this would be video 5. This is only a minute 20 roughly. This is about that very question. And again, I apologize for my voice. Don't know why, but there it is. Maybe it's God saying, hey, shut up. But this is Marjorie Taylor Greene saying, look, we've got to hold a vote to impeach these black robe tyrants. I found this to be pretty good. Excuse me. This is cut 5 at HagmanPI.com. Here it is.
Well, I think that would also definitely be a good vote record for the American people to see. I don't think Republicans would impeach these judges. I hope to be wrong, but I would like to hold that vote. And I think it would be important for America to see that vote, because let's be real honest, Eric. These judges that are blocking the president's deportations of criminals, cartels, murderers, rapists, child abusers, drug dealers, and more that are illegal aliens and really do not deserve due process in the United States of America. You know, there used to be a time where we would call that treason, because that's exactly what it is. And a vote on impeachment for these judges is exactly what we should be doing. And that's another a point on the list that people are upset that nothing is being done about these judges.
What final thought? 30 seconds, MTG. Give me the message to your colleagues. Just give me the direct message, speaking right to your caucus.
Yeah, the message is we aren't the Tea Party Republican Party anymore. We aren't the party of neocon Republicans. We aren't the party of globalism, and we aren't the party of eat the rich. It's real simple. We pass President Trump's agenda, and everybody else needs to get out of the way, because the American people didn't vote for you, Republican Party. They voted for Donald John Trump, and he's our president, and he has an agenda, and we need to get it done. Well,
there it is. Simple as that. And you're right. You know, back in my day, I guess when did it start becoming a precedent nationwide for the federal district court rulings? I'm trying to remember when that started.
I don't recall, but due process for an illegal alien is exactly what's been taking place.
Yes.
We got people on the left screaming due process. Well, they're getting due process. Their due process is to be arrested and deported. That is due process for a non-citizen illegal alien. And so they're screaming about something that's already taking place. They don't get a judge and a jury as an American citizen would, because they're illegal aliens. They don't have the rights of an American citizen. They have the right to be treated with respect and courtesy and taken back to wherever the hell they came from. So, that's it. That's due process. On the face of it.
Exactly. And President Trump today said, oh, wait, you know what? Self-deport. We promise you beautiful flights.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know.
As they're sitting there in their seats all handcuffed and leg irons, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, exactly. Somebody from the chat, JM, wanted me to ask you this. This is on a different topic altogether. Let's talk about, you know, Carney was just voted in, that communist POS up there in Canada.
Right.
And President Trump has masterfully, by the way, kind of went around Canada with his trade doings and left Canada holding the bag. I love that. But the question from Jam from chat, what's your comment on President Trump's comment on, like, you know, hey, maybe they'll be the 51st state. What's your thoughts on how that's being handled? And was that rhetoric or?
Well, I'm not sure that's still an issue. I believe that President Trump said that in jest. I can't imagine a country the size of Canada becoming a state, first of all.
We're going to need a bigger flag. But go on.
Plus, we got the French province, which is another whole thing where they speak French. And it would be a massive undertaking. I don't see that happening. I see it as just something that was done in jest. I don't know if there's any specific goal in mind, maybe to get a better trade agreement with Canada and with the tariffs. But other than that, I see it as just something in jest.
No, I agree with you on that. It makes me think of those two Canadian comedians. Back in the, I guess it was in the 80s. All right. But we can certainly see what I'm really impressed by is President Trump's handling of the economy and the tariffs and the trade, and then bringing back our manufacturing base to this country. That's what I'm really impressed by that. I'm really impressed by a lot of things. I don't find my savior, small s, in our government, because I don't think our government, even with the composition that President Trump put together of people, I still think, John, and then I'm going to let you respond, I still think that it's going to be up to we the people. And by that I mean, oh man, I hope it never gets to the point where you have a Judge Boasberg, you know, coming out of his house, going to work, and then bang, you know, he's dead on his lawn. And then you have a Beryl Howell going to work, and bang, she's dead on her lawn. And pretty soon, you know, hey, wait a second, something's going on here.
Well, it's called anarchy is what it is.
Well, no, that's true.
Right.
But at what point? I guess we're not like that. The left, the communists are, but we're not like that. Should we be? And if so, when is that appropriate? Ooh. Is it ever appropriate? Go ahead.
Well, it's not a secret that I was the commander of the militia for St. Louis City and County. and back in 1995, 94. And our mission statement was to follow all lawful orders from the sheriff of St. Louis City and County, and the any lawful orders from the governor. We would not follow any unlawful, unconstitutional orders from any entity. There's been probably 100 or more books written about where that line of sand should be as to when citizens should take up arms against what is the allegedly legitimate government. Maybe an extreme example may help. If the government was coming to my door and demanded that I turn over my Bible, that would be a call for use of deadly force, just as an example.
Okay.
If a government mandated that I get a COVID vaccination under force of arms, under threat of being arrested, that would be a time to use force of arms to resist it. That's two examples. It would take something pretty extreme, and we were real close to the vaccinations being mandated under force of arms and putting people in jail as criminals if they failed to get the vaccination. We were really close. We had people in high levels, governors and congresspeople, advocating that people get the COVID vaccination under threat of being arrested. There would be a cause for force of arms.
Actually, I'm kind of impressed. When I say impressed, excuse me, I'm kind of glad it did not get to the point where it was not a sustained campaign of tyranny at the time, to the extent where you would see an armed rebellion, because that's not good for anybody. It's just not. But the fact of the matter is, if this would ever happen again, man, I don't think it's going to happen the way the globalists would have it planned out. You know, I don't think it's ever going to. I don't think we're going to have a population that's going to be as compliant as they were, as we all were, as we were collectively in 2020, 2021, and 2022. Do you? I
don't. There were truly bizarre examples. There was that pastor up in Canada where he was having church services, and the police were coming using force of arms to shut down his church. There was a video of a woman in America. She was at a sporting event outdoors on the bleachers, not wearing a mask, and she was forcibly arrested for not wearing a mask outdoors at a sporting event. Handcuffed, taken away to jail. My friend Sam Anders, you know Sam, he mentioned, John, we had down in Arkansas, we had the casinos open on the same street. The churches were forced to be closed under force of arms. Police, I recall a pastor having a church service in a open field where the people were sitting with their cars with the windows open, or windows shut, I should say, and receiving the message on their car radios, and the police stopped that by force of arms. Any time there's an arrest or police ordering something to be stopped, force of arms are behind it, aren't they?
100%.
Of course.
You know.
So the pastor is in front of these people sitting in their cars in an open field. They got their windows rolled up. They're listening to a message on their radio. Even if the COVID was a real pandemic, which it wasn't, no harm could come to these people because they were all isolated in their cars with the windows rolled up, and the police intervened anyway.
You know, I wonder, John, what history or what future generations are going to say about the Cuomos and the Whitmers and the Newsoms and others.
History is written by the winners. It depends on who wins.
Man, that's a great point. You're exactly right. When you scroll on X or whatever platform of your choice, you'll occasionally see the pictures from, you know, of grandma in a plastic bag, you know, with arm, I don't know, arm holes or whatever, or arms, plastic arms coming out and hugging their grandchildren. But yet you have this incredible, I believe, mass murder of the elderly by Cuomo.
Cuomo did that. He put infected people in the close confines of nursing homes. That's obviously clearly intentional murder, intentional homicide.
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, John, I'll tell you something. I think I'm with you, and God bless John Moore, folks. I'm going to say this again. God bless this man. Again, he does 3 hours in the morning, early morning, of radio. Please go to thelibertyman.com. Make sure you listen to him and then dig down for the archives. It's real, it's an eye opener, I'm telling you. His information is quality. His guests are quality. So please follow him. Support his sponsors. Support his the products he offers. Support, no, just support John, and listen to him as well. And I thank him for being a part of tonight's program. But John, I think you are exactly correct. I think we are going to see if we can keep the wheels on this vehicle known as the U.S. I think we can, because I think we have what it takes as Christian conservatives. And I'm not so sure about the other side, but as Christian conservatives, I think we have what it takes to really have the renaissance that you mentioned, as long as the people involved are true to their task. I don't know if I said that properly.
I agree. Well, the wild card, of course, is the tens of thousands of commandos from Russia, China, and South America, and the Middle East that are here waiting for orders. That's a wild card that remains to be seen what's going to happen with these guys.
Do you think, and now this bothers me, and folks, you know, listening to this live, you can chime in on this too. What bothers me is if I sent out, a group of of terrorists, of paramilitary, a group of paramilitary, if I sent them out, and I'm sitting back, in the Swiss Alps, I'm watching, I am to direct their movements, and I'm watching what's going on in the U.S. And I know I've got a team or two or five or 10 in the U.S. Wouldn't it make sense to pull the trigger now to activate these groups, these terrorist groups? Because if you don't do it now, there's a good chance you might get tagged by ICE or by the feds or, you know, whichever department. What do you say to that?
Well,
it's hypothetical, but
if I was the guy sitting there in the Swiss Alps, I would have my men strike while we're the weakest. Right, every day, every week, every month, President Trump is in office. Our U.S. military gets stronger. The FBI gets going to get stronger, doing real work instead of arresting people for misdemeanor trespass in the U.S. Congress. And within a year of President Trump taking office, every branch of government, military, FBI, Department of Justice, will be far stronger and far more efficient than they are now. So the time to strike would be as soon as possible while we're at our weakest point. And that's what I would be doing if I was that person in charge.
Well, I have to say I agree with you. Now, we only have about 6 or 7 minutes left. I'll tell you what, my time with you, it just flies when you're on. I appreciate the not just the information, but the class that you bring to this program. I appreciate that. So I'm going to give you, just say whatever you want, go wherever you want, if you want. And,
Well, I typically end our conversation with reminding people that ultimately, spiritual battle. We talk about all the nuances, and there's dozens of them, obviously. But this is a battle of good versus evil, quite frankly. What made America what it is, and is the Judeo-Christian beliefs and way of living and way of conducting business, conducting our lives. And that's what got us to where we are, and that's what's going to prevail in the end. I'm convinced we're going to win. I don't know what's going to be between here and winning. Possibly a lot of grief, a lot of death, and so forth. But I believe we do win. And I encourage all our listeners to keep in mind that it is a spiritual battle, to pray daily, pray without ceasing, to remind their friends and relatives that this is a spiritual battle, and not give up, to remember our heritage and what's important, which is to preserve Western civilization, because Western civilization is at risk on many fronts. And the Christian middle class of this country has changed the world in very good ways, and will continue to in many good ways. And the New World Order can't tolerate that. They can't tolerate Christians with strong biblical beliefs and foundation. They're doing everything they can to hurt us and bring us to an end. And we're fighting back finally after decades of procrastination. The Bible will be back in schools, so the Ten Commandments will be back in schools. We'll have prayers before a public meeting starting. And it's got all the atheists and the communists in a tizzy because they see their whole plan falling apart before their eyes, Doug.
Man. Yeah, I just have to mention this. There was a school board meeting in California. There was somebody wanted an invocation at the beginning of the meeting. And this leftist communist woman, if that's what you want to call her, just went off. I mean, she went off saying, we don't need this.
We're not here for that. This is not why we're here.
You saw that, right?
Oh, I saw it.
Gosh. I mean, you know, they not only kick God out, but it's a demonic force. And you're right. We are in a spiritual battle. Folks, don't forget that.
Well, going back to Catherine Austin Fitz, she says the New World Order is afraid of Americans and their guns. We have more guns in this country than we have people. We have more than 300 million people, and we have more than that, more guns than that. And they know that that's an issue. That's why we see the Second Amendment under attack so much, because they have to accomplish their goal. They have no choice. They have to disarm us. That is mandatory. So we need to keep in mind that our Second Amendment cannot be tampered with. And no matter what happens, who's in office, the Second Amendment has to reign supreme in order for us to maintain our liberty.
Amen to that. And I'll tell you something. That's something worth fighting and dying for. No one, never allow your guns to be taken from you, your arms to be taken from you. We have to. I mean, that's got to be the ultimate red line. We've already basically been run roughshod over on the First Amendment. And I don't know. But go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, we almost out of time, but the outcome in Europe in World War II would have been far different if all the men had been armed like they were in Switzerland, and still are, by the way. Safest country on the planet is Switzerland, and there's a fully operational machine gun and ammunition in every home with a man between 18 and 60 years old. How about that?
Well, I guess I'll drag my machine gun out with the... never mind. I mean, some of the safest places on the planet are heavily armed. So
that's right. That's right. Absolutely.
But that 100%. John, my goodness. I love you, brother. I mean, really, you do such a great job with your show. You do such a great job. I love talking to you. I love your insight. I respect your talents, which are many.
Doug, thank you very much.
How else can I stroke you?
I admire your work also, Doug, and you've become quite the author. Do you have a new book in the works, by the way?
Oh, actually, more than that. It'll be coming out, the next one, very, 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 very soon.
Well, give me a copy of it. I'll read it, and I'll interview you on my show. We'll sell some books.
Well, I'll tell you something, brother. I'm not sure the world's ready for what I've got to say, but... anytime. Okay. But yeah, so within a few weeks. Okay. God bless you, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. And folks, that was John Moore, thelibertyman.com. And don't forget,